everybody. This is a special episode of the Green Lantern Corecast.
Yeah.
This is our feature document. This is our feature commentary on the Green Lantern Emerald Knights movie that recently came out.
That's right. So you bought the DVD, and this is on the DVD. It's featured on the commentary.
This is a featured commentary placed onto your DVD set.
We're the variant editions.
Your local comic shop will more likely have us. If they don't, you tell them why didn't they bother to get us.
And you actually, you also get a Colton action figure with purchase, so you might want to buy it somewhere else. That's what I'm saying. So
just pirate it from the internet. It's cool. We don't care.
So for your information, again, all of us are in separate locations. So as we're talking and commentary on this movie, we might have somewhat different response times. So,
sync problems, right? Yeah.
So basically, you know, pay that no mind.
Well, Frank, who's here tonight?
As I was gonna say, who's here is myself, your host, Frank Mateo. Joining us is Kuhan, our resident little recorder monkey.
Little monkey.
That's offensive. I think that's racist.
I don't know if Kuhan's ethnicity allows you to call him a monkey.
I'm pretty sure that's a racial stereotype.
maybe like a grinning jackanape. How about that?
Jackanape.
Probably won't be annoyed by that. Jackanape.
Can I go jackanape?
I think you should. I think you need to at this point.
No, I step backwards. I'm gonna say monkey.
I'm just gonna go with monkey. I'm gonna stick with monkey.
I'm gonna stick with my original assessment.
This intro is longer than the movie itself.
Yeah, it Eric. Is. Eric. And you know we have Eric and of course we have Brandon. We have Brandon. Brandon West, quiet, nice rock center of this interview corner.
We are punchy tonight.
We're punchy. Yeah. We're just rowdy. Okay.
Brandon.
Hi.
Thank you.
Hi.
Okay.
That was sexy, Brandon.
2 years of doing this podcast, I realized that the reason Brandon talks the way he does, he's trying to talk like a sexy Southern belle. Brandon, you don't have the accent. That's what's missing, my friend. That's why I've noticed it for all these years.
What are we doing? Right, so
we're opening it up with the opening scroll with the Warner Brothers logo. Let's get this on the road. Let's get this on the road.
We'll say hit it when we're hitting it.
Yep, we're hitting it now. Look at that WP.
WP douche.
Order premiere.
You know what? I used to think it was cute the first couple times I saw them do green versions of like stuff and like colored versions, considering the movies and everything like that. But now I just think it's kind of silly and obnoxious.
Well, no, it worked with the Dark Knight with the bats, or Batman Begins rather.
Well, I mean, I'm talking about coloring the random thing anyway. So this intro, what do you guys think?
It is our first shot, our first little short story, or our intro to a Green Lantern movie.
Yeah, I think it's pretty sick. I don't know why her tail's wagging. I mean, she's in space, but whatever.
First taste of Kilowog, not good.
Henry Rollins. Oh, no, God.
Henry,
oh, God.
Andy Rollins wasn't as bad. I mean,
no, he really was.
No, because the thing is, they digitally altered his voice, so it's like, what was the point of even getting him at all?
They?
Yeah, his voice.
Did they? Is that your excuse?
I think it's
really.
Well, here's our first peek of
action.
Our first piece of action.
Shadow Demons. I'm glad they used the Shadow Demons in this because I've always kind of been fans of the Shadow Demons, even though it's kind of silly they're just Shadow Demons, but they never get to do anything. They're kind of like a really menacing thing that's just not around. But this is actually really
ass. Like, where are they from?
Crisis on Infinite Earths, like the original.
Yes, they're. Our original appearance was from Friends of Infinite Earths.
So this,
I don't remember that at all.
This sequence is pretty sick.
Yeah, here's our first taste of how so the rating system of this is.
Violent.
Yeah, right? It was.
I was like shocked by that when I saw it. Are you kidding? And then floating around in space?
I must have missed this part. I don't remember it being so violent.
Probably hit.
I remember the hand, hit it, but not the guts. And
yeah, you probably hit under the bed and then went forgot it. Like.
And then here's our opening title sequence.
So like, this I think I made it clear on the cast that I was a pretty big fan of First Flight when it was happening, when it came on, and I really, really loved it. And I was excited about this because I thought it was kind of connected to the continuity. And it sort of isn't, but I'm going to pretend it is, so that's my business.
Well, it could be. Like, you could kind of make
it.
It cannot be.
You just got to assume First Flight actually took place over a series of weeks and or months, that's all. So, and this is in the middle of it. And now this is Erasure walking down the hallway from Tron. Arisia, whose voice is, I guess, Elizabeth Moss. Is that what her name
yes.
is? Mad Men?
Yes.
She's just like a 4-year-old girl. Does she sound like this on that show?
Yes.
Yes. That's not. I'm not going to watch that show.
Wow.
This show is awesome, by the way.
I'm sure it's a wonderful show.
That's how she talks.
Why is that door so big? Whoever is that tall that goes through the
Who
door?
Is that slug?
Well, like, there's Kilowog's pretty tall. I mean, it's the Green Lanterns are pretty big. I mean, come on.
Yeah, it's one of those other ginormous Green Lanterns that we're supposed to know of.
And then we walk into this room and we get the, again, I like the designs because they're all from First Flight, which is fine. And then we get the kind of the first real taste of how the voices are different.
Here we go, Nathan Fillion.
Nathan Fillion.
Not a fan of Nathan Fillion in this. Can I just
really?
Say? Not a fan at all.
Didn't I say I didn't notice the difference between him and Christopher?
There's a slight difference, and I think it's just a little bit more personality. I think the problem is that Andrea Romano likes to cast people as that are famous actors and have voices that are distinct, but they're not good voice actors. He's not a good voice actor. It always sounds like he's eating something, Nathan Fillion. Or he's middle-aged.
Well, here's Jason Isaacs replacing Victor Garber.
Victor.
Yeah, here's our great taste of...
It's like a heart attack when
can we pause?
What? No, we're not pausing.
Okay, well,
smoking? Going right through it. I'm really upset about Jason Isaacs. Jason Isaacs is completely ineffectual and nothing. As
he wasn't awful. I think he just got spoiled by Victor Garber.
Oh my God, Victor Garber really is what made that last movie. So that's a voice actor. He's a legit actor with an awesome voice.
Yes, yeah, Sinestro sucked.
Okay.
Yeah.
Hey, I can admit that. Pretty much, no. Victor Garber was a great voice actor.
This guy's awesome. Is it racist to say he looks Asian?
This
guy right here, this the guy with the no hair and the flare. Anyway, Krona, huh? What do you guys think of Krona?
Well, he's not a midget, which is weird.
Can we talk about Krona later? Because
I
like they completely bypassed his actual origin in the comic. He created the anime universe, and he's a dick. It's like not because he wanted to find. We're not going to tell you it's because he wanted to find the origin of the universe, like anybody would. Because fuck you.
But he was just evil. He was just evil.
He's evil. He's just bad, bad, bad man. So that's...
the first time I saw this
know about him.
I got so excited because I thought we were going to get some kind of awesome Tomar Ray tries to save Superman story in this because I didn't really know what the vignettes were going into it. Like, I knew a couple of them. But, you know, in case anybody doesn't know, the most awesome story of all time Green Lantern is that Tomar Ray failed to save Krypton. Such a good idea. Anyway, yeah, I guess this is the basic part where they're saying something big is going to kill everybody. So I don't know.
The Book of Oa looks like it was just printed.
New edition.
Why do they
New
have
edition.
A giant book? It's just
it's a reprint. Special reprint.
No, listen. They need
cover.
A giant book for showmanship.
For Jeff Johnsmanship? Yeah. It's stupid.
That book was huge before him.
I don't care. I'm just saying. It's something that should not be in the continuity.
Here's the funny thing I find is, you know, the central power battery and the line you have to wait on.
This is ridiculous. What is it? And it's like, we have the most urgent threat of all time. Let's all just take our time. And it's like, we find out later in the movie that they have their own batteries, which is also not from First Flight. Unless I'm mistaken, First Flight, they didn't have their own batteries.
They didn't have their own batteries in First Flight. This is the first introduction of a personal power battery in this movie.
Yeah, when they introduce the personal power battery at the end, it's actually written by Jeff Johns. And I was saying to these guys earlier that this movie actually gets more in line with continuity as it goes on, as opposed to the beginning, where it's kind of its own continuity. And then as it goes on, it gets further from First Flight continuity, more into comic book continuity, which I'm not a fan of. I've always been very interested in the autonomous nature of, like, adaptions and stuff. And how come Arisia's ring is the only one that doesn't look like anybody else's ring? Not to be like that.
No. For this split second, you see her ring as a normal Green Lantern ring. In the very next second, they're, like, sideways.
Yeah. All right, and what do we think about the essential conceit of the movie, that is Hal Jordan telling a bunch of relatively boring stories to Arisia?
Oh, they're
I think
not.
It was fine.
They're all interesting stories.
Yeah.
They may be boring to us, but
I thought it was.
How does he
a better transition than Gotham Knights did?
Yeah, that was just a bad movie. But I think it's funny because how does he tell the stories? Like, they flew and then they did stuff and then they fought for 10 minutes.
Here's our first better introduction into an alien world in this book. I mean, this movie. And we also get our first glimpse of the Dominators animated.
You see some Dominators. I think we've seen Dominators animated before. I feel like we have, but you might
no,
be.
We have, but that was in like Legion of Superheroes.
Yeah, that's right.
What do you guys think of the art style in this?
Well, I think it's kind of, it is a little, people have said it's a little kind of disappointing that they didn't stray too much style-wise in each one. It's only slightly stylized differently in each one, but I think
this one was more different than the rest, though. Like,
yeah,
the rest of them were pretty much the same, but this one, like, I think the coloring and stuff was different in here than it was in the others.
Well, I think it's interesting because the Gotham Knights is an example that like people use a lot because each segment is directed by a different director, but they're all kind of just directed completely randomly. And this one, you get a sense of like how directors in a similar background actually like the differences between each one actually brings out the directors a little more, you know, because this one is, I guess I don't want to say like somber and stuff, but this one is actually feels more epic than all the other ones. I think it's got more, kind of a religious energy, you know, it's not just because based on the story, but just the idea of how everything's a little bit more measured and paced. And we don't see any, the only humanoid characters we see, I mean, they're humanoid, but we don't see any human faces. It's all the first, like four lanterns are all shapes and weird looking dudes and stuff. And, you know, I like this. This is the only iteration, I believe, unless I'm wrong, of this version of the Guardians creating the rings ever. I mean, you know, them all just kind of with Play-Doh and stuff.
The cosmic Play-Doh.
And they completely bypass the fact that the Manhunters were already created because it seems like they're saying, this is the first time they ever did anything. And, you know, it's like there's so much chaos in the universe. No one's
well,
like,
it wasn't relevant to the story.
Yeah, I guess just leaving it out. Basically,
it's pretty funny to think that the greatest threat to the universe were the Dominators. Like this brought them into action.
Yeah.
There's a funny pink alien. Somewhere
there's here. A funny pink alien.
You gotta see it. What? Wait, look at
the one,
around.
The one floating on the disc.
It's fine. Like you're a little, like a little kid. It's cool.
Ah, I wish we could rewind.
This.
I feel bad that I don't really know these Green Lantern's names.
Well, isn't it?
Well, some of these aren't canon.
No, I don't.
They're not. They're not canon characters. It's like all original designs for this segment.
There's somebody on the forum made a bunch of noise about how this wasn't canon and how this really wasn't the first Green Lantern. But, I mean,
and that's what I think is cool about it because, I mean, as much as a lot of the stories in this, most of the stories are adapted off of comic stories, I think that's kind of wasteful, you know? And this one actually is the least kind of padded out of all of them, you know, because it's very nothing, almost nothing happens in it. It's a very direct kind of story, but like I said, it's kind of directed with a more
symbolism.
So it's very, you know, whatever it is. And I did not realize that sword construct he made based on that cover until just now.
Symbolism.
It's interesting too that again this takes the track that the Guardians had no concept that the rigs were going to be able to make constructs, which I think is completely random. Like, what do they think they were going to do? Beams, which apparently is all they do anyways.
Yeah, well, you know, it's beams, and then Hal Jordan likes to make good punches. Yeah, I mean, that's all they end up doing right now anyway. They're like, how many constructs do you see as opposed to beams?
Yeah,
even in the comics.
In the comics. Well, actually, I think Jeff Johns, but yeah, I think artists do the constructs as much as they can. Just the writers don't really seem to care either way. This, I think, is interesting because it's definitely like planet that we're watching planets getting nuked. Like those giant explosions are population centers being obliterated. And these Green Lanterns are just flying there being like, what are we going to do when we get there? I don't know. Like, they're just standing around like asshole. Like, get out and do something, you guys.
Yeah. Oh, look, our ship got blown up. Okay, I guess we got to do something now.
I guess we'll do something now, which is like the MOGO story later, but I guess we'll get into that.
That's not fair.
These spaceships remind me of like those 80s anime spaceships, you know, that were all just like completely incongruent shapes that like
why like Gundam, yeah.
Like Gundam or like Ultraman and stuff, yeah. Yeah. Tails. And this guy's got balls on his head. I don't know if he's definitely looks like balls on his head.
I like the explosions. They're pretty good.
Yeah, it's well animated.
Oh yeah,
yeah, they're explodey.
I think for synchronization I should let you guys know that I'm slightly behind you, so
I might be too, so I don't know.
All jokes are delayed tonight. Just, you know. I call her flat.
I just have them like zooming into the fight right now.
Yeah, they're zooming around right now. It's pretty cool. I mean, I like this sequence as much as, yeah, every one of these vignettes kind of devolves into Green Lantern shooting beams through spaceships for 12 minutes. This, I guess, because it's the first time it happens in it, is more exciting for me. And once, as I was watching, I'm like, they're just doing beams. It's so boring. And then I realized, oh, right, this is the story about the first construct. That's interesting, you know. So, and it's kind of cool. I think it's interesting to see these. You kind of really do get a sense that they don't really know what they're doing, and they're just trying as hard as they can to kind of make it work.
Well, and it's not like it wasn't working. They are blowing these ships up.
Right, but like one at a time. It's kind of, you know.
It's pretty funny that in the course of the story, but you know, they have not been given any sort of a formal training at all on how to.
Well, I mean, who's going to train them, right? Like, what are they going to be trained in? There's nobody to train them in doing anything. Nobody knows what they do, apparently.
That's true. They just have enormous faith in the Guardians of the Universe.
Yeah, I just want to say this dude turning himself into a drill and ramming through the ship is one of the coolest things in the world.
Yes.
Especially a three-sided drill. impressive.
Oh, not even talking about that. I'm talking about this part right here where she dove through the ships and stuff. You don't see enough Green Lanterns diving through ships in the comics, if at all, ever.
And here's a taste of our first mortal death of a Green Lantern.
Yeah, yeah. And then he grabs her ring out of the way, big. Which is weird.
I love that. She said, "Oh, this is death."
I'll get him. No, you're not gonna get him.
Stop shooting bees.
This ship is awesome. Like
she had so much time to stand up.
You can talk about this movie all you want, and she destroyed so many ships. That guy was awesome. That guy was like, "F this, I gotta get her." That guy.
This is what I did. Like the ring raised her up for dramatic effect.
Yeah, it's dramatic.
No, she just laid motionless in a vacuum of space.
I don't know. I mean, there's gravity on that asteroid, I assume, because that's why she was laying on it. But you know, I think it was just a cool thing. The ring, and again, if you take this into First Flight continuity, which it is.
I like how they took a time out. I totally like how they took a time out.
Yeah, they just paused, like, all right, I guess we got to give up, guys.
Yeah, like, the ships didn't follow them, like, good, they left. They left. We're okay with them just being gone. All the first quitter. You're just quitting because your head looks like the under part of a dog, dude. It's not nobody's fault. This chick is awesome.
I don't know which one you're describing.
Oh, a ballhead dude, obviously.
Oh, the one voiced by Stephen J. Plum. Spike Spiegel.
Was Stephen J. Plum?
So start here.
Spike Spiegel.
The one who's not doesn't look like a ditto.
The one that's not the main one or the woman is the one with the ball.
There's also the one that's just a square that flops around.
Yeah,
she's flying carpet. Come on, leave it alone.
I mean, this is kind of generic stuff, like very much like, we should surrender. No, we shouldn't surrender. But I think she's kind of badass. She's like, all right, you guys can surrender. I'm going to die. It's awesome. Don't worry about it. Which is crazy.
She's
because, like,
I'm going to will myself to survive.
Yeah, like, eventually, later right. We're told explicitly by the Geoff Johns story that these guys are all chosen because they can overcome great fear, and yet three of them surrender, like, immediately, like, into battle. They're all like, well, we're going to die.
Two of them surrender, one of them died, right?
It's a process.
Here comes the great part of this part of the story. Single-handedly, all he's doing is what they were doing the entire time.
It's like, I'll show you by doing the same thing we were doing earlier. And the constructs don't really make too much of a difference. Actually, this space fighting stuff is pretty great. This is some of the better space fighting I've ever seen in an
action. Riding the ship, you know, fighting against everything. I honestly would
why does the ship just flip? Yo, barrel roll. It's like the one move. No one can
there we go, symbolism of the sword.
Barrel roll.
You're up to the sword?
To the sword? I'm way not even
in here. Am I, like, way ahead of you guys?
Yeah, pause for, like, 30. Pause for, like, 10 seconds.
The sword's coming up, like, right now.
I'm slightly behind everybody. I don't mind.
I'm still looking at a fist. Okay. Yeah, he just did the beam.
He's not even doing the beam for me. Anyway, who cares? This is that was definitely an anime shot, him doing, like,
Omega shot right now, bright light.
Yeah, see, me and Frank are there.
All right, I caught up. I'm with you guys now. By
there's
the stars.
The sword.
There we go.
There's
okay.
Now that they're all shocked.
Is no one? Do y'all not realize that we have time we can look at to sync up?
Yeah, but then we gotta say things.
Yeah, you can look at your own balls. I'm not doing that.
it ruins the experience for people listening.
This is awesome when he makes it bigger because that's actually
that's
spirit
awesome.
Sword extend.
Because I can do anything I want with this shit, and that's like that's awesome because that's the only time you really celebrate
his,
that.
His Lionel attack was great.
they remind me of the ships from Voltron. So basically, he's like four blazing swords. So four blazing sword. That's what this first story is.
Well,
about.
I was thinking
New
York
Rocket Jewel.
And here's everyone else trying to get into the limelight now.
Yeah, which even with much better constructs, it's like.
Oh, so that's how you do it.
I like how he did it, and then everyone else is like, "Well, it's not that hard.
Much easier than you made it look." As a matter of fact. You're kind of
that makes like a dragon type thing. What is that even like?
It's kind of like the guy who invented paper. Like his paper is such shit compared to the paper invented later by regular humans. You know, the first paper inventing guy.
Thanks for the cards, Doc.
Yeah, right.
Thanks for the slap trees, asshole. Yeah, and then you murdered all these bad guys, and then I guess that defeated evil forever.
Now this guy getting the ring now, this chicken looking thing. He's there in the beginning.
He looks like Blaziken.
I think because they've made another ring. Or,
but look how old he is.
No, because that girl, who knows.
It could possibly be through another member of the same race.
This is the most superfluous sequence. The sequence where he has like the little mini fight with this guy. I think it's just kind of demonstrate the rings and stuff. But it's not really.
Well, so that he can use it. So he can do the Hadouken.
But the story's already. Yeah, the story's already over.
Yeah,
you know? Like, that's cool to watch.
It's symbolism. That's how it's passed on. You know, it's because it's passed on from him to the next to the next.
But that's
to the
literalism.
Next.
It's not symbolism.
Yes, that, yeah. it's not like you're right. You're right. That is literalism.
Well, I mean, what else are they gonna do? Is just gonna like you know, are they just gonna just cut to the talking now? Or?
This where he starts to spin and stuff. Because this part where he trains this guy is just kind of a waste. Is all I'm saying.
I like how apparently the message here is that Hal Jordan possesses the first lantern ring of all time.
Just silly, but I'm into that. Whatever.
It's nothing to complain about.
Yeah,
it's Hal looks stupid, by the way.
I mean, Hal's just bragging now.
Well, it's not necessarily the first ring. It's just that, you know, the rings were passed on from lantern to lantern.
He had his hand up in his face. That is a bit braggy.
Dude, that
highway rings.
Yeah, that shot of Hal was an awesome shot.
It's symbolism or whatever.
But like, whatever, him holding the ring splayed out like that in space reminds me of, you know, guys don't watch Smallville, but when James Marsh's guest started sprinting with the Legion ring, as opposed to showing you his ring, he showed you his backhand. Like, he was like, five-finger ring salute. Like, look at my ring. It's like, is it amongst your other fingers? Anyway, again, she charges a ring, and Kilowog gives her shit for no reason. Does anybody think Kilowog is a prick for, now that I've seen so many iterations of Kilowog and all the different mediums, he's an asshole for no reason. Like, you're not actually training anybody by just being a dick. Like, they're not learning anything. You're just.
I mean, the only Kilowog apparently that is not that much of a dick is the one from Justice League.
Yeah, he just looked to eat cardboard, right? What was his thing? Because Kilowog's thing was that he was a little emotional, but he was a lovable goof. This drill sergeant thing is fine, but that's like so overtaking his personality, and it's not even that interesting. I mean, like, you know, it's what like, hey, let's train today. He's like, how about you drink my piss? Like, what am I learning from that?
Yeah, what happened to the great Kilowog, the, you know, great fusion reactors?
Yeah, and now we start the Peter Tomasi story, which is written actually by Peter Tomasi, the Kilowog.
The white circle.
Chris Somney.
But it's not Ermy anymore. It's
Deagle or Smeagol.
Deagan.
Yeah.
I mean, the change is fine because the Ermy thing was a bit too much and too on the nose because it's, you know, obviously named after the guy who played the world famous, the most famous drill sergeant history from Full Metal Jacket. This story, I think, is, I don't want to say the weakest out of all of them because it's got a lot of personality, but it just, again, devolves really quickly into, like, people shooting spaceships. And I don't think you really get a sense of Kilowog as a character at the end of it, you know? It's cool that you find out he's married in this continuity.
And she's pregnant.
And the Ayolande's there. It's cool. And Tomar Ray's voice is hilarious because you always assume Tomar Ray is supposed to have like a British voice or like a fucking preposterous voice. He just sounds like some dude.
Well, yeah, Jeffrey Rush.
Can we mention real quick that the logo's missing? So they got that rookie thing going on.
Right. Yeah.
Aresia's got her full.
No, no. Yeah, it's the art thing, and it's like, who knows, whatever.
Yeah, it seems like a clear thing to overlook.
Continuity's not really consistent. I mean, what are you going
to
do?
Well, I think that's how Tomasi wanted to write it, and because he wrote it, I guess, with comic continuity in mind, probably, and then the rest of them weren't really written with that in mind as much.
Exactly. And this gets, like I said, this gets more and more in line with, like, current continuity as it goes on, and that's a pretty good example of it, you know? And this, too, what does this teach them? This teaches them you can get killed by lava.
No, it's teach you to save your friends.
It doesn't, though, because, like, that's not what he says. He's like, don't save him, whatever, and, like, maybe.
Reverse psychology?
Well, yeah, sure, but, like, he never says in the end, like, it was actually this. He just, like,
nothing,
it just happens.
Nothing they learn here actually helps them in the end. Like, basically.
No, at the very end of it, he says he was never going to let them die
No, I don't think he's going to let them die.
Well, yeah, of course he wasn't going to let them die. But
yeah, when they're about to die here, he saves them all. But, and it could just be it's endurance training and stuff, but it's kind of like, I mean, you're not really learning any lessons from this. I mean, it's basically just like training 101 in most mediums. They just show a guy yelling at another guy while he's climbing up a hill, and then 10 minutes later he's like, wow, I've never learned more in my life than climbing up that hill. It's like, no, you just climbed up a hill and you're in a bad mood now. That's all. Yeah.
Did you grab that guy by the face?
Yeah, he's like, that guy's, okay, that's actually my face, you racist.
Yeah, right? Like, I didn't realize that he grabbed him by the face. Like,
that could not be his face. We can, you know, we're assuming it's his face.
You know, but it looks like, he breaks his neck.
He grabbed her leg with his neck.
Okay, right? Okay. That's fine,
well,
then.
He probably was like, oh, I can use my face for this, too. He's probably a pervert.
Probably just a pervert.
You know what I realized? Kilowog's design doesn't have those little dicks on his mouth.
Oh, Mount Doom just blew up.
Yeah, no dick mouths. Oh, yeah, that's a pretty epic shot right there. Yeah, again, this style isn't very different from the actual style of the movie and stuff, so not crazy about it. This guy, too, this guy doesn't basically – and even – it's funny because then right before everything happens, Kilowog gets in like a 25-minute fight with him, and then after the fight's over, the guy just dies, and Kilowog's like, I've learned so much. Like, you just blew up a spaceship. What did you learn?
Wait, we're not even there yet.
Yeah, come on.
Sorry.
Anyway, stop jumping ahead.
This part's hilarious because Kilowog has no problem going in and out of this thing.
Like, yeah, right. Like he just swims through it. Like what?
It's nothing but sand.
This is
watery sand.
This is guaranteed the most awesome part of the whole thing. Kilowog doesn't even hesitate; just jumps right in after him. That's pretty awesome. Good for you. And they're both like, "Oh no, hey, like, you are shit Green Lanterns, two guys. Like, you are just awful."
It's cool that he jumps right in, like, to save his life, but then he tosses Tomar, and then, like, you know, goes back a little, and then just walks through it.
Yeah.
Whatever.
And to save him, like, it's like, at no point did they make any effort as
we just walked right through. They could use the guy's neck, and throw him out, use him as a rope or something.
Here we go. This is the part of, where we're supposed to learn so much about, Deegan's character.
Well, style-wise, the way this background is drawn, the way that explosion was, are the only real stylistic things in this short. So it's interesting that the only stylized choice this guy makes when he directs the short is to be like, well, I want to make the backgrounds real pretty. I don't care otherwise.
Real pretty.
Real two-dimensionally cool. Looks like a video game, cel-shaded and stuff. I guess Tomar Ray doesn't. I was going to say Tomar doesn't have the bags under his eyes, but I'm like, oh yeah, he wears a mask. That's right. I forgot. And, like, those suits are constructed, man. You can just put that back together. It's not a problem.
But they don't have their rings.
They don't have their wings, yeah.
Oh, they took their rings. That's right. He's like, sleep on the ground, assholes. I don't understand. Kilowog's like me, the audience member. What are we learning here? You're just a prick who looks like a ball sack. So many ball sack looking dudes in this.
Oh, Batman.
This fight, again, there's no team being built. It's just Kilowog being built. This is actually a pretty cool fight. I think I wish Kilowog would kick his ass, honestly, because this guy's a real douchebag. And it's kind of cool to see him, like, I guess you're supposed to be like, wow, he's got Kilowog's ass anyway. But it's like, no, I mean, really, even if he wasn't, like, a tiny little dude, he's got, like, years of military training and stuff. And Kilowog does pretty good. He gets this one good kick in here. Eat tree, fuckface.
No, Kilowog gets his ass whooped. One kick doesn't redeem you.
He's punching him. He's like, give me
yeah. I love it. He just gets on his head and just punches him in the face over and over.
This and the
judo throw. Love the judo
throw.
This and the prologue are the only two parts of this directed by Lauren Montgomery, which is, you know, funny because they're not really that. I mean, the prologue, I think the rap story is well directed, but this isn't really that well directed either way. And it's kind of, I was really excited when I found out Lauren Montgomery was spearheading this because she's definitely directed the best of these DC animated movies and stuff.
Well, they only use two directors anyway.
A couple, yeah. And Sam Liu and her. And Sam Liu is actually garbage. Like, every movie that guy makes is complete trash. Anyway, but about this. I hope you guys learned that lesson by watching me treat you like shit and then beat up your friend.
Yeah, right?
You know, like, we're just still going to sit here.
In the image of Salak.
Yeah.
I don't like Salak say it.
Nah, Salak's head has been totally different every time he's ever been drawn.
And they didn't even show his mouth. It was, like, weird.
They do.
He talks with his antennae or something. This girl just, they just stand there with their hands out. Blank.
Ground. It's like the oldest thing in the book. Yeah. Like, whatever.
Go fuck yourself.
Yeah, right.
Go fuck yourself.
Again, it was important team building.
Important team building. Just drop in front of me. I don't like you. Drop.
I love these buildings.
They're cool buildings.
They look like tripods or like shower heads in your bathroom.
They look like the Indigo staff.
These are the Kuns, right? Like the most unfortunately named.
They're called Kundians in here. They never referred to them.
I think it's even more offensive. Kundians? It's like racist.
Well, if you just call them coons, then that's offensive.
I think cunts, they're supposed to be, which is basically ridiculous because I don't need to say it explicitly, but they're called the cunts, and that's kind of insane. And there's no way the guy who created that name doesn't know that. I mean, come on. Some guy in the mid 80s thought he was hilarious. Probably Keith Giffen. Somebody who thought he was hilarious.
Probably Keith Giffen.
Yeah, another guy who thought he's hilarious.
The Bwahaha of the DC universe.
Yeah, the least funny, quote unquote, funny guy in the history of comics, Keith Giffen, but whatever. Anyway. Deagle, Smeagol, what's
yeah.
Deegan.
It's what like shield work.
Did the shield break for you guys?
Yeah.
Shield
broke twice.
Forgot we're in the way. Anyway,
now he's screaming the oath.
It's cool.
Yeah, freaking.
Which was cool.
Yeah, that's cool. That's like the best use of the oath I've heard in a lot of the iterations of this.
I mean, granted, this is like the sixth time we've heard it already.
Yeah, but at least you know this is good.
I love this.
We get a veteran saying it out loud.
Like, I like the shield thing. It's cool. I mean, it's kind of silly that, like, yeah, it's cool that he gets shot. And again, Tomar was just standing there. And nobody's looking except for Kilowog.
Well, he's doing his job.
He's told them to save civilians, he saved civilians.
Yeah, you need to get those civilians out of there, bro. You need to bounce immediately. Meanwhile, Kilowog.
I love that. Like, Kilowog's like late to the party. Like, he could have caught up at any point, but he just.
Deegan took a shit in his mouth, and he probably pissed in his canteen, too.
Important team building.
That shot where he's getting wrecked.
I like this shot. Good. I love that shot.
Yeah, this is cool.
And then fighting
I feel like I missed all the brutal parts.
How did you miss this?
I don't like, not to be that guy, I don't like that he beats the tank. I think it would have been cool to see him get killed by the tank and then the other guys.
Nah, he needed a notch on his belt. So
he had a notch on his belt and he's a prick. I think it would have been more interesting to see something more like the other guys.
No, this was definitely the notch because otherwise you just showed off to some rookie and blew up a couple of ships.
Yeah, but it's essentially what happened. He just got to kill the tank that killed him and stuff.
Exactly.
Yeah. I like the actual short story better because the fight was smaller because he just got shot, you know, and then Kilowog just picked up a cannon and helped out and stuff. And I think
this is different. This is different than the actual short story that was written.
You don't need to add all this shit, I think. I like that he's bleeding out of the really low parts of his mouth and stuff. And this Kuntian, whatever.
Good on my wall. He's next.
I'm gonna chop off his face. No.
I like how he looks nothing like a
comic book.
Can we not do this?
Of the character. That's what I was gonna say.
Kilowog looks nothing like Kilowog either, because he doesn't have dicks hanging over his mouth.
Well, just like Atrocitus looks exactly like. We'll get to that later,
totally okay with that.
Get to that later.
Anyway, this is where the animation money runs out and people just start making green balls all the time.
here comes the greatest power to Green Lantern Corps.
Yeah, this is the lesson that Kilowog learned. You make a big ball. Like, what led to this?
No, what is a taser sweep?
It's called willpower, Eric.
But why did getting beat up by that little dude and then getting dropped in lava teach him willpower?
It's so the will to win.
It taught him to will to do anything to survive. Taught him the will to respect your fellow members of the Corps.
Can I just say something, though?
Yeah.
If you treat someone like shit and tell them, and they talk back to you, you beat them up, you're actually making them less willful. You're saying, if you give me will, I will beat it out of you. So any kind of, like, hard line.
So you're supposed to prove to him that you can't beat it out of me.
Yeah, but exactly. He treated him like shit. It wasn't like reverse psychology because he's like, I'm surprised. I didn't think you were going to be the tough one, dude. Like,
no, here's the thing. Is, like, in actual boot camp, and I can admit this, that I've been told by actual people who have endured this, they are treated like the lowest piece of garbage.
Yeah, because it desensitizes your mind.
Hold on, guys. This is like a sad moment here.
It's all about taking orders.
Oh, here's a tender moment of important team building.
I'm just saying.
Important team building.
Well, here it comes.
You guys
are haters.
He's like, you look like Chubby Dog. That's
no, I'm not. I wasn't.
This is pretty awesome, but that's just from the comic.
Yeah,
this is pretty
awesome. Yeah, totally taken from the comic. But it's
I don't even remember that in the comic.
Neither do I. It's cool because got green blood. It's cool.
He earned his stripes. He earned his stripes.
He's like, but boss, yellow isn't. Oh, you're dead.
it's like bright green blood. It's
kind of crooked.
It's like you didn't finish the circle on our head.
Hold on, let me take a finger in.
Die for me, Papa.
He's like, don't take a picture of this because I don't think this is gonna count as my actual promotion.
I like this coffin. Yeah, I like that.
They did it on the comics. It's pretty cool.
I like how the rookies are. I don't know what to do, guys. I don't know what we're doing. Well, I'm going to take charge.
Grabface just made a sad face. I like that. They ran away. We can just stand here, right? It's like, no, you can tie up the ones I beat up, you fucking assholes. So I think what we learned from this story is that everyone is a useless asshole except for Kilowog. Thanks for teaching me how to not be a useless asshole.
I kind of really like
–
don't they kill a lot of people, don't they?
I don't think anybody necessarily
– No, they killed a lot of bad people.
They don't show any guys are dying. A lot of explosions.
Cannon fodder never counts as life.
Even at the end, spoiler, when they beat Krona, they don't kill him. They just put him back in a hole.
Whatever.
Well, no, technically,
I don't think it's a spoiler. I think people would mostly watch the movie before listening to this, hopefully.
I'm glad that most people are actually watch the movie first before listening to our commentary.
I like how there's a construct space station. That's cool. But whose construct is it? Because that person is probably really stressed out right now.
No, they probably had, you know, building materials and then, you know, made it or
it looks like just constructs. And then the windows are definitely constructs. So maybe it's just like a communal thing.
Maybe. Oh, yeah.
Here comes the last part. What do you guys think about adding this as a short story? It's so she's such a non-character in the mythos that why do you think they added it? Do you think it was just
She's an interesting character in the mythos just because it's a Green Lantern that pretty much focuses on physical attacks. She was the martial artist. She's pretty much like the Karate Kid or who else do we have?
Karate.
She's the Karate Kid. Like what?
No, he means because like DC Comics. Not,
yeah, DC
no,
Comics,
I get it.
No, I think it's mine. I think
Richard Dragon. There are characters that interest most people in a certain level that they find a Green Lantern that's just a martial artist is an interesting story based on honor, based on an entire culture around this dynasty.
She's a better story than Sornik.
I don't know about that. But they can't really do Sornik because it'd be too early in the. But anyway, wait, does anybody like when this started roll their eyes? Because as soon as they saw the person folding their legs, turn around, you're like, oh, I'm gonna get another 20 minutes of karate now. Like I don't like everything. Just been. I mean, not that I don't like action. I'm all about action. But DC animated movies are just too focused on action, not at all focused on plot or story.
Well, I mentioned earlier before we started is that I couldn't remember Lara's backstory. So no, all this was just like, what's gonna happen next? So I couldn't roll my eyes at this. But after this first fight, I thought it was going to be repetitive because you think that, she's going to go straight up against the boss. Nope. All right, next. Boss? Nope, not quite.
It's like eight sub-bosses, and then you go to the boss.
The story goes on.
Exactly.
It's like, just move to the top of the screen and sweep your legs, and then a little apple will appear on a plate in the middle of the screen in a few minutes. Don't worry about it. But this is actually pretty cool. I like this. I didn't realize that the character has those, like, she's actually – those arms are like giant arms, so she's got little arms that are controlling them and stuff. That's
like paper constructs, yeah.
It's really cool. This is all, obviously, this is all like Asian themed, like a mix of all East Asian movies and stuff, like the Golden Dragon, and like this is obviously like, those are like, big paper mache arms and stuff. It's actually pretty cool. This one I want to say, I know what I just said doesn't make any sense, but what I'm about to say, this is probably the best one out of the whole movie, I think.
No.
This
we
is
just
awesome
saw
here.
The best one.
No way. This is awesome right here. Her jamming the way through the ship. This is a pretty good fight. So the only problem with this is Lara doesn't use the ring to her detriment. Like you spend a lot of this asking, like, why doesn't she use the ring more? When you're watching, just do a big, especially when her brother, does the thing that you think she should do with the ring when the brother is there. But whatever. Let's just watch this.
Well, no, she does stuff with the ring then that we'll get into. But
yeah,
I didn't think the ring could do.
Except then punch her in the fucking face. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I was like, oh god, don't kill me.
Oh my god, punch in the face. You're an asshole.
Where did that ship come from, and why did she let it blow up?
Cause fuck it. That was the wreckage that she was next to. Like this guy is like the worst palace guard ever. He's like, you just go in for no reason. He's like a coward. He's like, I'm gonna act like I'm being stoic, but I'm just fucking scared.
He's acting on the good of his people.
Whatevs. I think it's pretty cool if you just think of the perspective of this guy in the story. He just saw a ship explode, her land. He waits 4 minutes and she comes out. Everybody's dead. Like that's awesome. That should have been the short story. The short story should have been this guy hanging out with these guys and the guard. Like, well, what are we doing? Because our only job is to make sure people don't do what she just did. Want to go on lunch break? No, there's nowhere to go to lunch. We're all on these floating platforms. There's no lunch.
All he hears is grunts and screams.
This is very anime here. I mean, this is obviously the most traditionally anime kind of thing. Look at this guy, the punching Judy nose. It's such an anime thing. Come on. Who's that character from King of Fighters? Frank, you would probably know with the face like that.
King of Fighters? Are you referencing like horrible video games?
Horrible video games.
Colton would know, but he's not here.
Where's Frankie? Anyway. I don't know. It's pretty cool because they try to do a little bit of variety in this. But this is a lot of fighting. It's hard to kind of like really cerebrally think of this,
Well, I was mentioning earlier that she's about to use her ring to.
As soon as this fight starts, you're like, why don't you just make a bubble with your ring? And she's like, get punched in the face instead. In the face.
And she's on the defense for 90% of this fight. Just make a bubble. There's no reason to.
Yeah, just make a bubble. Walk in there.
At this point now, she's. Illuminating the ring. I mean the room. So yeah. I don't understand how the ring can cancel out his invisibility.
Because the ring can. Back in the day, the ring could do literally anything. So you didn't really need an explanation as to what.
But you can't will someone to light.
Sure, you can.
You just cancel out their majiggers. He's obviously using technology. It's not like he's using magic. So
what?
That's probably what it is.
It's not like the ring is doesn't work against magic either. It's just weird. Yeah. It just doesn't make sense.
I like the sheet. Well, it's cool because it's like I've never really been too much into the whole the person doesn't use the ring when they have it. It's like, haha, that's how awesome they are. It's like, then why do they have the ring? Just quit the ring. Let somebody else have the ring. But, you know, fight crime yourself, you lazy. But, yeah, this is pretty cool. I like she turns into a hammer right when she's about to hit him, too. And he's like, no! Yeah, no, you're getting hit.
See, I didn't like that because I thought the staff she had was pretty cool.
It's cool, but she doesn't want to cut the guy in half. Where is Frank?
Why does every man in her family have a scar across his eye?
It's like a family thing, man. It's like
they were all watching the same eclipse, and they did not watch it through reflective. They just watched it with their eyes.
It's like an honor thing, man. Like when you hit 13, like your bar mitzvah, and then you get your eye slashed.
Getting punched in the face is like a big deal on this planet. Like everybody does. it's kind of like getting a soda. You get punched in the face. Like, do you want to get some Sprite, or you want to just get punched in the face? Where is Frankie? Do you guys? Is he still?
He said no. I think he went to the bathroom.
Oh, cool. Anyway, but yeah, getting punched in the face is cool. But
so is it just me, or when I first saw the dad? That's where we are right now, right? Like when I first saw the dad, I still thought he looked like Uncle Iroh from Avatar for a second.
It's hard enough. Avatar obviously does a lot of like archetypal images from anime too, so they're coming from the same place. But
yeah, sure.
This whole holographic egg thing is cute, and it actually leads to probably what is
awesome.
It's the best moment of the whole movie. Yeah, but doesn't play out as dramatically as it should because of the animation.
I think it could have went a little longer, and it would have been better. It
should have ended there, but she should have punched him
in the room. That's true.
But
that's true.
It's the animation is really limited in this part, and it doesn't really service the emotion of the story and stuff. But this actually it plays out pretty well. I like the idea that the guardians are kind of send her there to like, all right, fix your dad. He's being a dick, you know, and like you get the whole gamut of actual emotional content between these characters and stuff. Maybe it's because it's familial, so you have to kind of have more emotional content with everything. But you know, I like it better than the false interactions we get in the Geoff Johns story and the non-interactions we get in the Kilowog story, you know. And this idea that the arm doesn't get fixed, it's kind of like an overt metaphor, but I kind of like it as a metaphor, you know. Like,
you know, how does the arm play into anything?
Well, it's because it's just this idea that it's like a toy that he never fixed because he was too busy doing some rough shit. And I thought the whole thing is because it's all so hand to hand, the fact that the arm is kind of limited, and you know, I don't know, maybe it's
I saw that doll and I couldn't help but think they live in a giant palace and that's the best.
That's the best doll.
That's awful.
They don't
what
have
a terrible father.
Well, it's more sentimental than anything else.
Maybe that's what it is. When you have a little kid.
Now we got a flashback within a flashback.
I was actually going to mention that.
I was like, really? You get into it later when Sinestro was talking to Arisha, he actually says, that's what they told Eben Sir. But I know it's not true. I'm like, what? You just recounted his action? This flashback.
Oh, no, this would have been an action within the Book of Oa that's, you know, it's like a subsection within the same subsection.
Yeah, technically we're watching a sixth story.
Big here. Face.
Yeah.
Galia is so adorable. Let it be said without any interruptions. What's the name?
Galia Zed.
There you go.
Galia Zed, who has been killed in every iteration he's ever shown up.
He didn't die in Justice League.
He did die in Justice League. He got blown up. Brave and the Bold, he didn't die. I think he died in First Flight, too. This is hilarious, him getting killed. Not for nothing.
Not yet.
He's like got the shield and then a missile.
I'm watching the missiles hit him right now.
Yeah, missiles are hitting him right now.
Running away.
I was like, oh god! Oh god, missiles! Oh crap!
They can't resist the him bouncing joke in animation. And you know what? Neither can I in real life. They should make little Galia Zed balls, like little rubber balls.
That would be great!
I'm gonna name my left ball Galia Zed.
He had arms back there.
He has little arms in the back, yeah.
He has four legs.
This is awesome, and they him to death. I like how he's still covering his head. And she just dies. Dude, roll. You're a ball.
They just beat him.
Create a better construct.
And like, nobody's doing anything. Nobody's stopping them. They're just getting beat.
Ring is not yours.
This is actually Lyra's origin. That Dave Gibbons story from the early run of Green Lantern Corps a couple years ago is a total ripoff of it with the two twin brothers and the sister getting the ring. But this is her actual origin story. I'm not familiar with the actual story this is based on.
This is basically her actual origin story.
That's cool. And I like the dad gets upset because she called – that's like the whole thing. The dad's like, you called the Green Lanterns first. You didn't try to help. You didn't team up with your friends. You just straight up call for the Green Lanterns. That's really grimy and stuff. I think it's interesting. I think it's interesting that it's kind of like, it doesn't really spell it out, but the inherent problem is that she's not really interested in, like, kicking ass. She's kind of interested in, like, nation building and fixing stuff, you know. And
stopping a war.
Yeah, exactly. She's interested in stopping the conflict as opposed to being involved in the conflict and stuff. Her dad has spent the entire flashback on his knees. Asshole.
Yeah, right. You might as well stand up or something. Do something. No.
These guys could have been, like, I mean, where's that honor in the knees? I don't understand.
Dude, when I first saw this, I thought she created a giant symbol that was dive-bombing people. I was like, that is a fucking boss shit.
So did I. So did I. And it's like, oh.
That's still cool, but it would be more boss if she was just like, fuck off. Made up a limb that blew people up. That was awesome.
This is pre-mustache Sinestro.
I
like the show close-up of his face and disappointment, and then how disappointed his hand is. His hand is so...
Sinestro's...
All I think of this scene is... Avatar, for some reason. I have no idea
why. That's what I said. When you were off in the bathroom, I said, like, he looks like Uncle Iroh. Like, when he first turned around, like,
He does.
Zuko reference.
When he first turned around, I thought he was Uncle Iroh. Like, and oh, wait, what? And, yeah.
Like in the middle of the Green Lantern movie, someone has to fight Zuko. Well, it's fine. Zuko can't fight anyway. So this is actually pretty funny because I was like, you're not that intimidating because I just watched the whole flashback and you with your ass kicked the whole time. Not even getting kicked or kicking ass. You were sitting there with your ass already kicked, like post-kicked. But this
And you were already humbly defeated.
This is a pretty sick fight right here. So, I mean, again, the animation doesn't serve this fight very well, but it works as hard as it can to be an awesome fight.
Well, it's definitely the best fight in the movie.
Yeah, 100%, obviously, yeah.
Well, again, this is the most physical confrontation between the Green Lantern and another physical opponent that's pretty much just domineering and strife alone, not laser weaponry or beam shots. They're plenty of beam shots.
If this gold dragon thing was there, I mean, I feel stupid that I haven't checked out the story, but if this gold dragon thing was in the story explicitly, it was probably different because the yellow actually would have worked in the original story and stuff. But,
probably. I mean, it sort of works here. It may deflect the shot.
It's just awesome armor. That's cool.
Well, I think that's Will, her not wanting to kill her father.
Newer knowledge or whatever.
Bullshit. Oh, man, he gave her a haircut.
Knock him out. Look, she's trying to stab him with this awesome knife thing.
She's not trying to kill him, though, yeah.
She tried to stab him. This is actually cool how she transfers to different martial arts weapons, and it's...
Yes, she definitely had the best constructs.
Best constructs.
She definitely has, like, the only constructs.
Only constructs, period, yeah.
Which is funny, because, again, you know, Saul Sinestro is supposed to be an expert on...
Who wrote this one?
This I don't. Eddie Brigance actually wrote this one.
Here's the best part of the movie.
This is the best part right here, where
the holographs and the fight scene and the
learning your background. Your dad, you have to kill your own father. This goes on a little. That should have been more towards the end of it, because this goes on a little too long after that. It's an interesting middle ground to the fight.
Wait, hold on. Did he just break a const? Wait, that doesn't even make sense. I totally missed that before.
Yeah. Well, constructs can break.
They break constructs all the time.
Like snap, whatever.
We just watched it break a couple times.
It's not really breaking.
It's basically, no, you can think about it. They're building something out of thin air. It's not like, it doesn't turn into metal. It's like a plastic thing in thin air. They can dissolve it if they want. It obviously, the physics of the constructs are hard to argue.
I guess.
But this is actually pretty cool that she does the kick thing that everybody loves to do in Jet Li movies, where she kicks the rope into his face. He's like, I'm just going to grab your mouth.
You mentioned earlier that it's gone on too long, and I'm already tired of it.
Well, I think this is a pretty good fight. I just think that egg thing happened so early in the fight. It's actually a really dramatic point. It's actually a really dramatic hit in the fight, so it doesn't really bother me, because then the rest of the fight gets pretty dramatic from this point. Epic dragonfly, and then I will stop flying moments later.
It's an aerial combat battle.
He looped around that pillar for no reason. He's like, there's an updraft.
He needed to open his mouth menacingly.
Yeah. Stabs her in the shoulder.
I think she just forgot how to use her ring, because she had all that time to come up with one of her great constructs, and she just flew away.
I like it. And she tried to blast him. Where? Like, she tried to blast him, like, his knee? Like, where was she shooting at that last minute?
It was supposed to be, you know, a threatening shot.
And again, we get the same lesson we've gotten all three stories now. If you just think about it hard enough, you could be an awesome Green Lantern, you know. The problem with Green Lantern movies, storylines in general, is that every time you get a brand new one, the way the story ends is the guy just uses the power really well, like, you know, which is kind of so redundant. Guaranteed in the movie, he just does some big, like, I'm going to say the oath and blow you up, you know. It's just like, I've done it, seen it a million times. But it's pretty cool, this part here, where she, you get to see her break the...
I really like the effects.
And this gets really dramatic here, the way it's directed and the way the music really swells here, and she just, like, starts fucking wailing on him, you know? It's pretty good.
Breaks it. Well, it's so unnecessary at this point, though.
Done. I'm gonna fucking smash his face.
He's still capable of moving.
She kicked, punched him in the face 4 times, 5 times.
Knees.
And then she does this ridiculous, just makes no sense of in terms of physics, this move right here. Yeah! And then this move, also no physics. And then
it's an alien martial arts. Come on.
Yeah, come on, right? She's not. It's not like she's human.
Oh, the maybe
they're
the gravity's
on Earth.
Important team building.
Yeah, we've also learned the lesson of important team building. This is pretty good. This guy kills himself. Nice close to the story.
No, it was horrible.
It's actually a good ending.
Wow. Yeah, it's supposed to be Asian, right? So like
it's
the Asian
like that, and it's dramatic and
no, come on, do not go there.
No, no, like it's supposed to be like an Asian like.
If he was seriously shamed, then he would have killed himself after the Green Lanterns had to bail his ass out.
Because I think he was also shamed because he got his ass kicked so bad.
No, because his eyes were now opened by his daughter.
Yeah, and he says a bunch of nice stuff to her and then dies. He's like, wow, you sure beat. We really learned that lesson about how sad it is to get to dominate the universe by how much you dominated my ass.
Just saying, the blue blood, I think, means that he's a St. Louis Blues fan. We bleed blue.
I think the shutter speed hand falling to the ground, one of the worst things I've ever seen in my entire life. Hate it when they do it. Hate it when they did it in this.
Can we mention that she literally leaves her home planet without anyone to run it?
Oh, yeah. She left the...
There's her brother's still there, right?
No. She is the structure.
No, her brother's
Captain of the guard.
Yeah, the captain of the guard. And her brother's still there. Like, there's still people.
Her dad's wife and her brother are still there, so they're still going to run the planet just as
her
she...
Her dad's wife is dead.
The first woman she fought was her dad's wife, I thought, or was that her sister?
Whatever.
No, that was his wife.
That was
his dad's
second wife. Yeah, her mother, stepmother.
Stepmother, not mother-in-law.
And that's fine? That's fine with you?
No, it's awful, but I think the point is that...
What are we supposed to say about it?
I think she's honored the planet into it. Like, you know, that guard who already respected her enough to, like, let her murder the leader also bowed to her. She's like, redundant respect, I win.
I love Tomar Ray's giant fin.
You look so old, Tomar. It makes fun of how old he looks. At least Tomar closes his mouth in this continuity. In the comics, he doesn't fucking close his mouth.
Hey, look, it's Big Face Guy. He didn't die.
That's just a different galley. It's just like
Green Lantern. It's like his cousin or whatever.
Every time a Green Lantern dies that is visually distinctive, they just get someone from the same race to be Green Lantern. Like Chip and Chip, you know, and Kilowog. And Kilowog.
Tomar Ray, Tomar 2.
And this to make the Mogo doesn't socialize joke here.
Mogo doesn't socialize, waka waka.
I kind of like it because that was
the
actual joke in the story, but I think it's actually cool that they all laugh at it. I think it sells it a little better.
Well, then I love it goes, doesn't socialize. That's hysterical.
I'm
so clever.
For whatever reason, Hal Jordan got real serious.
He's like, Mogo makes me sad. Mogo's a sad story because Mogo just told him he doesn't ever fight crime. That's why it's a sad story. It reminds me of part in 300.
And here's the greatest cameo in Emerald Knight.
Bofunga the wrestler. It's not even a cameo. He's like a main character.
It's like fourth build.
Rowdy Piper, man.
Rowdy Roddy Piper.
I mean, I think this is the role that you're gonna get a wrestler. If you're gonna get a wrestler for any role, it's Bofunga, I guess.
This also represents Dave Gibbons' complete capitulation to no creative integrity at all. Because Dave Gibbons, who drew the original story, wrote this. This is the stupid bit here. This is obviously just to stretch the story out where he fights this lava guy. I have no interest whatsoever in him fighting this lava guy.
Nobody cares.
And then when he starts flipping around too, I'm like, this is not even an interesting fight. You're just flipping like everyone else in this movie. You know, it's the fact that this guy has a nose piercing in the middle of his forehead is cool, but that's about it. And the Bofunga redesign, it's funny to take a design that's so shitty in the comic and just make it spacier.
I have a lower jaw for a shoulder guard.
I like that this guy has like a gun and he's like, I'm going to use this gun to run at you. Like, that's not what
I lost the gun.
That's like every time you see a movie with Jackie Chan, the guy with the gun runs at him shooting. It's like, stay back. He can't get you. Just stay away from him.
I don't know. He's still a magical Jackie Chan. But anyways.
That rope trick. cuts this guy's arms off. Not a big deal, though, because he doesn't need those arms. I like this guy's wearing underwear on his pants. Apparently, it's just a style in space. Cut off his other arm. Do it. Yeah, again, I have no emotional investment in this.
Wait, hold on. Did he only cut off three arms?
He cut off all four.
He cuts off all four eventually. There it is. Yeah, they're all gone.
Well, I missed him.
All four
gone.
And here's what I think Kuhan has to agree is the worst line.
That.
What?
Disarmed.
Waka
waka. There's no better way to say that.
There's nothing. No, because then you look at the stupid.
Said you wouldn't kill a one-armed man, would you? Wouldn't hit a one-armed man, would you? You wouldn't hit me when I'm not armed. Something. Whatever. Or he should have been about to smash me. I'm unarmed, and then just completely ignored it. Like kept going, bypassed that dialogue. Like that wasn't funny. Yeah. But you'd be like, you look like you are disarmed.
Only a flesh wound.
I do like a Dr. Evil pinky to the mouth.
Tis a flesh wound.
I like this guy's like, Mogo's the toughest dude in the universe. It's like, that doesn't really count as being a tough dude if you're a planet. It's not really fair. You know?
Well, you know, he didn't want to tell him it was a planet.
I think he's just screwing with Belfonga, man.
Oldest trick in the book. Oldest trick in the book.
But how on earth did
make you pick a fight with a planet?
How did he get what?
How did Mogo get that reputation?
Well, I think it's funny because, you know, is he in this sector or how does this guy know Mogo?
Again, the thing is, we don't know enough of how Mogo patrols a sector. For all we know, he could create miniature constructs to go around the universe.
We could completely make up stories. Like, I can imagine that Batman has little psychic children that fight crime for him in Detroit. There's nothing in the text.
But he does. But he does.
I can imagine that Superman, when he's a hamburger, is actually a veggie burger, but there's nothing in the text to support that.
But he does. But he does.
Yeah, well. No, he doesn't. But yeah, what does this guy look like? He looks like one of the Beast Men from Thundercats. Who's he?
Or He-Man.
Or He-Man. Whatever I'm thinking of. Is it Gigantor? What cartoon am I thinking of?
Whatever. What's the creative license?
Which is the one where Darkwing Duck fights the Decepticons? That's the one.
I think that's IDW Comics right now.
I think you're thinking about DuckTales.
I think I'm thinking of Gargoyles. It's amazing.
His wrestling yell.
Microphone's cool. It could have been a funny joke because he had the gun in his hand. He could have made it a microphone.
Bofungamania is going to run wild on you.
That's my major problem with this story and the original story itself. Bofungus spends months looking for Mogo the Green Lantern, right? Doesn't find him. Mogo does not do anything in these months. Now, he lets this murderer, Bofunga, run around free on his body. You know, there's no implication that if he would have tried to run, Mogo would have stopped him. And anyway, Mogo does nothing to fight crime this entire time. Mogo is the least
again, technically, Bofunga is only in one small region on an entire planet.
But he's not kidding anybody else. Is there no other crime happening in that sector at all?
You don't know what Mogo can do. He could be multitasking.
Now, again, Frankie said that, but there's nothing in this text to support that anything like that is real.
Well, maybe right now he's moving around and doing other stuff. We don't see Mogo from the outside not moving.
Yeah, you can't just be guilty by assumption.
Well, in the original story, Mogo didn't move because he's a planet, and planets can't just move through the universe and stuff.
Mogo can, though. It's Mogo.
That's true.
Mogo does now in the comics.
No, originally he never moved from his sector if he ever got near another planet, he would totally mess up their gravitational field.
Well, yeah, that's the joke about him not socializing, because if he got near another planet, he would destroy it and stuff. But that's, again, he does nothing this whole time. Bofunga just spends months running wild.
He rebuilds his planet.
Yeah, he rebuilds the foliage. He's like, some dude's running around my circles. No big deal.
You guys can't argue with the idea that he doesn't actually fight crime. Like,
well, sure. Who knows? Maybe he is.
We don't know that.
We don't see him do anything remotely crime fighting at all.
Well, just because you don't see it doesn't mean it doesn't happen.
It's like breathing.
Eric is like saying the exact same thing about the other 7,200 Green Lanterns. We only know about five of them. We see them.
We see the ones that we see fighting crime.
Yeah, but we never see the other ones fighting crime.
I'm just saying, this is like, again, if you went to the office and every time you saw me at the office, I was playing solitaire. And I'm talking about you only ever saw me in the office 3 days a week, but for 4 hours you saw me playing solitaire. What do you do for a living? I said I'm a lawyer.
I don't know what you're doing for the other 20 hours of your life.
I'm just saying, I say I'm a lawyer, and what would you say? I assume you are, because I've never seen you not be a lawyer.
is it a lawyer's office? Yes.
I assume there's lawyer. There's lawyer letterhead or something. Like, I have the Green Lantern symbol on my chest or something. I think what happened was Mogo is a living planet, so he has no fear, because why should he have fear? He's a planet. So the ring went to him. He got the ring. The Guardians are like, oh, shit. Well, now we can't take it away from him. It's going to take him billions of years to die. And he's so fucking lazy. He's so lazy. I think this should be Green Lantern story about how lazy Mogul was.
Who trained Mogul?
He's a hardcore.
I like how
he
smashes his little ball guys and they try to run away. It's like they're just machines. They would just stay there. But it's like, why smash them? You don't need to smash them.
I want to know how Mogul got his lantern symbol. Like Brandon brought up a good point. Who trained Mogul? Did he have a white circle when he started out?
It was Avra. Shut up.
And then like a Kilowog puts him on the lava planet. You're learning about team building.
You're not doing it right.
Yeah. So effectively, Mogul has to be the worst Green Lantern of all time because he hasn't gone through any training processes. He barely ever makes constructs, and he doesn't actually fight any crime. When there's literally crime happening on his face, someone is actually committing crime.
But he worked as a team's
There is no crime happening on his face.
And the team's deus ex machina.
Yeah, it's not illegal to. Is it a crime? A galactic crime to kill some plants? No.
Is it a galactic crime to be a murderer on a Green Lantern's face? Yes, it is.
Well,
he's a wanted murderer. You have to assume.
No.
We've talked our way through this entire story.
He battles people, so yeah. It's consent.
But he was about to murder that guy on the ground with no arms. Like, presumably.
But they consented to battle.
He consented to battle. It was a duel.
So if two guys in the street get into a fight and one guy loses his gun, the other guy walks up and shoots him in the head, the police go, well, he was asking for it. You're not going to jail.
Buddy. I mean, not anymore, but, you know, in the 1700s or whatever.
We just have that
legal back then.
Conversation with the...
Well, this is galactic justice, right?
Yeah, it's not the same laws. This is galactic whatever.
John Stewart had this problem in the holiday special, remember?
Can I get back to this story in this comic really quick? This story in this movie really quick? This story is padded like crazy from the original story. I mean, blowing up the planet, doing all this stuff, and
it had to be revised. The original story was what, like three pages,
4 or 5 pages. And the fact that Mogul does stuff now, all the stuff he does now is actually really good. That he's a therapist, that he's the person who makes the rings go in one spot, which doesn't actually make any sense. But
and he's at second base.
He's second base. Oh, he's second base. Yeah, that's fine. That all makes sense as a Green Lantern. Like, it's kind of like Salak has duties. Salak doesn't ever fight crime anymore and stuff. That's fine. They're an organization. Somebody in the lawyer's office where all I do is play solitaire all day, somebody has to file my paperwork, you know? But I'm just saying, like, he didn't have that until, like, 2 years ago. This, too. Does he kill before?
True.
No, probably.
He catches him.
Because
like,
he just shoots the ship in space. Presumably the guy would have no oxygen, but he does get sucked down.
Oh, because Mogul can adjust his field or whatever, right? Whatever.
So basically what happens here is that Mogul does not bother to stop this evil murderer until he does something pretty offensive. Like he's like, I'll blow up your planet. Mogul's like, I guess I'll get involved. So it's just like Green Lantern from the first one where they're like, hey, let's watch this fight. Oh, shit, they blew up our ship. I guess we'll fight. And then even Lara's like, I guess I'll go fight crime. Well, no, it's silly. It means her parents, I guess, but still.
It was her first solo mission. It's not like she had been listening around the universe.
This reminds me of like current Green Lantern comics where all they ever do is fight their cousins and neighbors.
I love it's like, and that's why Mogul doesn't socialize. Like, wait, why? You didn't explain it. You never explained anything.
Because he's
so
lazy.
He doesn't want to. Is that why?
Yeah.
He doesn't have a personality. He's lazy. Is that why he's socializing?
He never talks. Never.
He doesn't socialize because he's boring.
Like, it literally Shadow said Demon. Nothing.
I'll slap your face.
Shadow Demon.
His animation is nice. The glare from the sun, that looks nice.
Yeah. I'm not watching Blu-ray, so it's
nice. How Jordan able decent. To.
It's just cheapish, but you know, what are you gonna do? The problem with I really like First Flight, but the problem with the First Flight designs is they don't really lend themselves animation very well because the symbols look like garbage all the time. Like the tiny little symbols with the green glowing, it doesn't never look right.
Hal almost threw her into the sun.
Once again, Lara's the only one you see the constructs.
She's like, look, constructs, guys. They're like, that's funny.
Anyway, oh, wait, hold on. There we go. Kilowog's got a hammer.
Like, she's excited. Yay, they're going to help us. It's like they're literally 3 feet away. Where were they this whole time?
It's like Bubble, Shield, Ray. Oh, what construct?
Everybody's looking out the other window.
Even the Shadow Demons are doing more than just being like, you know.
There you go. Atomic bomb. And Sinestro gets like mad at her. You passed out, loser. It's like, you blew up a bomb on my face for no reason. Hit that guy. He's like, you fell asleep for 3 hours because you're a fucking lazy. What? Oh, I'll tell you another story about it.
Why is he just standing there? Like, did the battle just end?
It was over.
Yeah, it's like, we don't get to see it because it's like a movie.
Sinestro put his, foot down.
Like, he put the, this weird plant. He's like, look
what
at
are they doing out there? There's little green balls floating around.
It's funny because the plot of the movie seems to be they know Chrono's going to come out of the sun, so they're just going to hang out and wait for him and then hope they can figure out a way to beat him or just let's blast him with some rays. Like, what if that doesn't work? Shut up. That always works.
That always works.
It never works. So this is the...
Haven't you been paying attention to all these stories we've told you?
Eventually,
can we reiterate that this was a horrible, horrible Sinestro voice?
Yeah, Jason Isaacs is just awful. I mean, I don't know.
It's not
that terrible. Hold on. This is the Sinestro narrated story as opposed to the Hal Jordan one.
Yeah. Originally, in the original iteration of this movie, all of these were going to be Sinestro narrated stories.
Yeah. Personal power battery.
It was all going to be
Ethan Van Sciver's Atrocitus.
Yeah, that's. I like that question.
Is that Atrocitus? Because I knew this was obviously based on the Tiger story. But I was like, is that Atrocitus? Like, oh, that's cool. It's kind of Atrocitus. Maybe it's Atrocitus. Atrocitus has the most least consistent design of any character ever. But I really love how
I've been put his dukes up.
I like how
I'll fight you, man.
I like they strayed a little bit from the first flight design on Abin Sur. Like he had just random crap all over his face on first flight. Now it's just, you know.
He's still got random crap all over his face.
No, but it's not.
He doesn't have the horns.
Not as much. Now it's just a regular face, except he's got like a tattoo on his mouth.
Yeah, he's just old now.
This is actually, I think, pretty. I don't really see much of a difference if I'm.
You don't really?
I keep thinking he has a Hitler stash.
This is actually a really good fight too. If not for the Lara fight, this is definitely. I didn't want to say this is the best directed fight of the whole thing. This like one on one between Atrocitus and Abin Sur.
Well, it's pretty much a comic book fight where you know they blow through some walls and.
It's funny you say that because I think most comic fights don't have this. I think this is just a good fight because it's got a lot of tone. I mean, it's very suspenseful because he's got nothing he can do and he's trying as hard as he can to work with what he has. And this part's pretty dramatic. They're falling and stuff. And it's pretty cool. Hitting the sun. Why are the Green Lanterns impervious to anything? Like, it's like they're still just regular dudes, you know?
Remember, they've got the ring to a great degree.
He's wasting the shit out of his energy. He's like,
I like his breakdancing he did.
Yeah. Watch my flare.
Like he really uses that 1.1%. Like, he uses that to its fullest extent.
And it's like, he cuts the guy a little bit. I'm gonna cut your arm. What? Even the toss is like,
it destroys his armor for some reason.
Why is he like holding the battery like that too? This is the best too, where Sinestro completely captures him and lets him go and throws him in the water. Like,
yeah, right?
It's a waste.
Like, he's got them. They can just capture him, but he just tosses them so that they can attack him some more.
It's like, if you could do this at any time, why don't you just do that at any time? Arnold Vosloo is Abin Sur. He doesn't have a bad voice. Again, it's just the point is Andrea Romano is not good at casting. They go for stunt casting so often, famous people so often. They don't get people that are good voice actors because it sounds like Arnold Vosloo. He's not at all reacting to what this character is doing with his face. Like, he's like smirking with his face, and Arnold Vosloo is like, "Hi, I'm Abin Sur." And the show, he's going meh, you know. But it's like you don't sound like that at all.
Well, I thought Wonder Woman was cast pretty well.
There's casting that's good in Wonder Woman, but then Carrie Russell herself is not very good in Wonder Woman. This here is pretty cool. I like him smashing that.
Frankie, now I can't see anything but a Hitler stash on Abin Sur. All your fault. It's all your fault.
I don't understand this battery thing. Why couldn't Abin just put it back in his pocket dimension every time he touched it?
Because it would have destroyed the pocket dimension.
It's not established.
Yeah, we don't have pocket dimension necessarily in this
right,
continuity
apparently,
yet.
Apparently, Abin Sur kept it in his gym locker.
So this beginning is interesting, but you could tell it's a Geoff Johns story immediately because Sinestro, instead of stopping the villain who's murdering these people, goes off to fly with his friend, which is Geoff Johns 101. You know, like, why bother fighting crime when we can hang out and have
the dialogue is stupid.
The scene right after that, the beginning of this is actually pretty good because it's just an action sequence that's dragged out and well directed. And then once they start talking, you're like, "Wow, this must."
Why did Sinestro follow him? That's so stupid.
He
like,
was worried about
this is best friend.
Yeah,
so what? You have a job to do.
Yeah, maybe
he also has a ring that can locate Atrocitus anytime he needs.
Except
it.
Atrocitus has killed so many other Green Lanterns and gotten away, so it's definitely something that could. And then he does that thing that all Green Lanterns do: crushes this innocent dude. Not innocent. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, I know that innocent.
Like, he's like, "I hope he lives." Fuck them.
Well, come on. They use their ranks to a certain degree
of non-lethal. This adaption of Tigers is so loose and so poor.
Oh,
like,
God,
it takes away everything that's remotely interesting about Tigers. Like,
yes.
100% takes
away.
He looks like he's smiling.
Because in the words of Alan Moore, he's a Fukunak, right?
Yeah, that guy.
I actually like, my friend got me
he looks like he's wearing a skirt. I'm sorry. Alvin Storm flying from the back. Looked like he's wearing a skirt.
You guys are missing the worst conversation any two anime characters have ever had in their entire lives. Like,
I don't really care.
What a horrible conversation.
Something about destiny. Something about not believing in destiny.
The funny thing is how insane Abin Sur seems in this conversation. Like, he's like, do you don't believe in destiny? He's like, oh, he believes in destiny. It's like, Snesher's like, that's stupid.
I kind of like, believe in destiny. I kind of like the idea of we wear destiny on our fingers.
It's interesting, but I as soon as he said it, I was like trying to think of why, and I was like, doesn't make any sense. Yeah. But then he explains, like, oh, because the ring shows it because destiny. Snesher goes, no, it's a program that somebody built. And Abin Sur, shut up. This part's actually pretty awesome that they just stop and help the ship. It's cool to see something like this and not something they even do in Geoff Johns comics. So I'm shocked that he wrote it in here. I guarantee they were like, we need to have them doing something besides flying and playing baseball and eating turkey. He's like, oh, but that's all I wanted to do. And so they probably wrote it in here. The fact that the fluid is frozen out in space.
There we go. You mistook me of someone from your world.
Oh, that's my favorite line of the whole movie. It's like, remember how...
And despite your mistake, we became friends.
People make mistakes all the time, Sinestro. Like, when we first met, you thought I was from Kurigar, even though I clearly am not. And I wasn't. Even because you thought that, we were friends. Like, what a dick thing to do. Like, hey, are you from Brooklyn? No? Well, we can't be friends, because you guessed I was from the wrong world. And it's like, maybe it's a rape thing. It's like, oh, are you Jewish? Because I'm Jewish. No, I'm not Jewish. Wow. I can't believe you thought I was Jewish like you. That's disgusting. We can't be friends. What a stupid fucking thing of dialogue. It's just Jeff trying to throw in some kind of interesting continuity thing with it's well sacrificing an actual conversation two human beings are having. Like, it's ridiculous. And then again, Abin Sur sounds so insane here. And we're essentially
I don't know if you guys noticed, but Sinestro's righty in this.
He is writing it. See, the funny thing is, it's not so hard to believe Geoff Johns would have wrote that in. I mean, He's the guy who always writes in a xenophobic story in anything.
Yeah, well, he's like Legion of Superheroes. It's a metaphor for racism, even though the entire Legion of Superheroes is white, and I made it that way. Fuck you. Like that, you know. And the fact that this is Yzamalder, that whoever, how are they pronouncing this?
Yzamalder.
And it looks like one of those girls is talking. That's hilarious. They should have made it more like that is in the comic where it was literally horrifying. Like, you know, and it was the...
Nailed to the wall, man.
And again, this completely defeats the whole... This one sequence here is the only part that's actually from Tigers, the story. And this is the whole point of Tigers, that it's these horrifying interdimensional creatures that the Guardians trap in the outside of space who can see through time and are just evil, and they give Abin Sur advice that he follows, and because he follows the advice of reverse psychology, he ends up dying and stuff, and that's the whole point of the story, you know. And even mentioning Blackest Night, you think Geoff Johns want to throw that in there, except he throws references to what he believes is his own original idea of the Sinestro Corps, you know, and it's like, what is the point of this at all, you know? I mean, it just doesn't sit as interesting. And
again, the funny thing about it is that the Tigers was never about the Sinestro Corps.
Oh, they don't even
the power.
Yeah.
Tiger, he took the name Tigers. He took a story that was made not by his own and tried to make it his own.
Yeah, and basically the advice he gives Abin Sur doesn't make any sense because they never follow through on it. He's like, Abin Sur, you're going to rely on your ring or something. And it's like, oh, let's completely just leave that in the middle of nowhere. And then he's like, I'm going to tell you the future. Okay, go ahead. And he tells him the future about Sinestro. And he's like, that's why I don't believe you because Sinestro's a good guy or something. Like, it's not interesting.
Yeah, it was useless. You would assume adding that in, like, oh, we're gonna get Sinestro Corps War next, but you're not.
You're not. It's just
could have just left it the same.
Geoff Johns continuity stuff. And if this is supposed to be the actual future he's seeing, it's like, I'm sure it's not. I'm sure Al Jordan's not gonna get shot in the chest by Sinestro in another movie, you know? Though this is pretty awesome, the way he dies and stuff.
Oh, the kill shot.
Yeah. And then, you know, again, this extended cameo sequence. Crib is in there. I didn't even realize Crib is in there. All right, this wins because Crib is in there. But and the Guardians, so sleepy. You guys okay? I was sleepy.
Okay. You want a nap?
And I like how he's mad specific. Like in Tigers, it was all vague, and like then they got really specific, and they got really cosmic, and like, you know, the White Children of Loeb and all this shit. And then this is Sinestro, will form a Sinestro Corps War with Arkillo and Crib, and then
with Arkillo and Crib.
Right on top of the Green Lantern Power Core battery, and then it's
I like, I like again that, you know, this is a story that's being retold by Sinestro himself.
Yeah, and then the best is you're thinking like, oh, maybe he didn't hear this part, but then apparently Abin Sur went to Sinestro. Get this guy said you're gonna yellow energy and create a Sinestro Core. Crazy, right? Like, that is crazy. Meanwhile, this is the first light continuity. He's actually currently harnessing yellow energy, but whatever. And then he says, and it was crazy that Abin Sur heard that information. Obviously, they were wrong. I'm like, that's not even ironic. Like, it's weird that you told her that story. Like, it's just awkward.
Meanwhile, Arisha.
I don't even understand how they came to that story.
It's like Destiny. Also, here's a story about when we talked about Destiny once.
I didn't learn anything in that story. I fought a red dude, and then I found out you might be evil in the future. That's stupid.
But I'm just a sword does die.
And it's like yeah, look, let me tell you a story about Destiny that this guy told Evan Sir that one time, 20 years from now, I'm going to turn into an evil guy. And obviously that's not true because I'm not. And she's like, but he said it was 20. I know, it's crazy. It didn't happen yet. But he said it was 20 years. I know, it's crazy. It didn't happen yet.
Destiny, believe in it.
This is where we're
getting but don't believe in that.
don't believe in it. Destiny, don't believe in it, but believe in it, but don't believe in it.
And now here's the big final.
This is actually pretty big. I know Brandon said he didn't really like it. Yeah. But this is pretty big. I mean, it's a lot of beams and stuff, but
I like this the cosmic swirl, the Kirby dots.
Yeah, basically Gozer from Ghostbusters 2 comes out of the sun and And that's
I wish someone would have asked, are you a god? Are you a
god? How? If someone asked you a god, you say
yes.
That's what was the name of the guy in Vigo I'm thinking? I'm not even thinking of Gozer, I'm sorry. I was thinking of Vigo from Ghostbusters 2. Because he reminds me. I think it's cool that he moves slow and that Corona doesn't have any stupid Corona dialogue and the only thing is
well, that was horrible. Like you're just fighting a giant monster.
Giant monster. That's really cool.
Hey, if Corona would have had dialogue, he would have been saying whatever he said during Trinity, which would be something about universe, souls, planet, earth, souls.
We didn't even get a backstory on who this guy is.
They gave you a little bit of backstory. He was a guardian who went rogue.
They told us Corona. He's evil.
I love this Green Lantern just dies automatically.
This is actually really cool. This is like reminds me of the Matrix where the Sentinels go into those swirly things.
Boudica.
She's evil. Boudica. This is actually pretty. The only problem with this is that these shadow demons, which are a really interesting asset and really useful against Green Lanterns, don't do anything except swirl around them. This is a really cool sequence, really well put together, but they're just swirling.
How can just cut them with the freaking?
Well, no, he's pretty sucky too.
This is pretty cool though. Watching him fly up the body was pretty cool, and then him getting this one shot in, like I'll take care of it. And they're like, good. Hal's blocking it all. We'll get it. Typical Green Lantern core, like the lessons we learned in this movie is like when the one really tough guy does everything, all of you stand there like assholes. And that's the core.
Oh, wait, here it comes.
Awesome.
Here it comes.
To move.
This
really
is
slow.
The most useless thing.
Oh, dead.
This bit's awesome here where the rings fly past them and they just, Sinestro's like, nom, nom, nom. Cookies.
How is it that what? They scream, we've got an open shot, and then they shoot him in the shoulder,
which is not an open shot.
It's just ridiculous.
And then again, Kilowog turns out that what we just learned there, he didn't learn his lesson at all. It's like, stand there and die. Apparently that's what a Deagle or Smeagol or Deegan taught him.
Deegan.
Right, Bacon. Taught him is that...
The only way to destroy antimatter is with matter.
No, I love apparently that's what Arisa was chosen. Because, you know, she had one... She was in one class, in physics class.
She was in physics class.
No one thought of this? And first off, not for nothing, air is matter. So him existing in our universe... Everything is matter. As soon as you step over to our universe, he should be destroyed. The sun he's coming out of is matter. This doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense. You just say hit him with a planet. That's all you have to say. Like they try to make the fact that they try to be like that's a smart thing. It's like, well, first off, none of the Green Lanterns thought of that. They were standing there for days, you know. And this is I like how he's like, we got one shot of this. I'm like, dude,
the sun.
He's like, dude, we have one shot of this. I'm like, there's probably plenty of planets between here and the sun. Like you probably have plenty of shots at this. Don't worry about it.
Well, my thing is, they retreated to Oa, and he could have just not followed them.
He just
went the other direction.
I got different plans.
I kind of don't want to die, so I'll go this way.
But he probably doesn't realize it either, because he knows that since he's antimatter and he's existing in matter universe, he's constantly interacting with matter, so it doesn't actually make any sense matter would kill him. So he's only killed by a convenient plot device that doesn't make any sense, so he's probably not...
This story is killed because we're bringing reason into it.
There's no reason not to have reason.
Hey, look, the chicken guy. He's been around for
chicken guy,
ever,
yep.
Apparently.
This is my cult.
The fifth Green Lantern ever is there.
Still around.
I told you, every single time an interesting Green Lantern dies, an equal member of their race appears. They love using this thing. Every time the UDC animated movie, there needs to be a planet moving and it needs to shatter asteroids that are nearby.
I mean, it makes it look like it's moving through something.
It's cool.
I like how he actually stood a fight against Oa and it started to crumble.
Yeah,
that was cool.
This whole thing, well, there's some good bits. I mean,
actually just stand there and take it. He's like, I'm going to defend myself.
It's pretty epic. And you think about the fact that in the movie coming out, spoiler, I guess, Krona is like one of the main bad guys. And the comics, currently, Krona is one of the main bad guys. And this movie, in this throwaway vignette movie, which doesn't take place in any continuity, they completely destroy Krona and stuff. Pretty cool. Oh, a construct. How'd that happen? Krona, meanwhile,
the construct came about, and here comes the.
Hey guys, I guess Mogo does socialize now.
Meanwhile, the shadow demons are clearly just exploring the universe, not wanting to kill anybody. They're just random. That was actually cool. I didn't realize it was Green Lantern symbol until just now. Well done, Laura Montgomery. Suck a nut. And suck a nut beam.
Here comes.
And they're like, oh,
Mega Hadouken.
Again,
Mega Hadouken.
We learn from this movie. Wait for
Just
stand there like an asshole.
Wait for somebody to do their job.
Wait for somebody to do work.
Someone actually does their job properly.
Wait for Kilowog to kill him and go, we did it. By we, I mean Kilowog's nickname is we. Yeah. This is actually pretty cool, Krona grabbing the planet, tearing it up. There are a lot of really cosmetic things about this that are cool.
No reason why he couldn't have gotten out in time.
Dude, it's because he's awesomely getting crushed.
And they fly into the sun, and then everything explodes. And
there's no reason why that sun should still be there.
It's not. It's exploding a little bit. I like how they destroyed it. Oh, they did not have to do that. They could have just found a moon, but they're like, nah, let's blow up stuff. Guardians are like, we're on here! Nope.
No one cares about you guys.
I didn't see them leave. Did you guys see them leave? Did they leave?
They said they evacuated.
Yeah, they specifically said right at the beginning, said evacuate.
The sun didn't blow up. The sun just became green, like final night.
Mogo's like, I did my work this year. Mogo, that's still only 2% of your work. Yep, I'm done.
That's his workload for his quota. That's his quota.
I really enjoyed that they used a lot of the
red button.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that they used a lot of the storylines, the designs from First Flight too. I mean, a lot of these characters just show up green.
I never liked the center power battery. I'm sorry, I never liked.
Oh, that looks like a big. It's like serrated and like a big ball.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm okay with it.
I didn't like the First Flight designs in First Flight, but now that I'm used to it, I can't really complain about them. So.
I still love white gloves. I'm a big fan of the white gloves.
I don't like Hal wearing the John Stewart braces. I don't like that.
I'm not a fan of that brace thing at all. It doesn't actually make any sense. If you had gloves and a shirt, would you just wear braces? Everyone else has wicked, awesome gauntlets. And I was like,
no.
I want to look like an asshole.
Tomar Ray got the braces too.
I like how Lara was just staring at Arisha waiting for her to turn around.
It's like, I want to, dude, my back hurts. And this is the best where he's like, I guess you could say, someone would say you're an angel of destiny. He's like, no. No one would say that. That doesn't actually relate to any of the stories we were.
Stop talking about destiny, Sinestro.
It's like it doesn't actually make any sense. That doesn't make any. It has no bearing on the story you told. Plus, the story you told has no bearing on the story you told.
Is Sinestro being creepy again?
I'll bite you. Mmm, I smell good. And then everybody thinks she smells good.
Let me tell you about the squirrel joke.
Oh, that brand
is. I love that squirrel joke.
Let me tell you about the time I faced up a bunch of manhunters.
Hey guys, credits. Look, Nathan Fillion. He was Hal Jordan.
Can we talk about the voice cast now?
Can we talk about the squirrel joke really quick? It's silly to make that joke because we saw the squirrel earlier and we know there's a squirrel in the core. It would only be funny if we didn't know there's a squirrel in the core. He should have mentioned the fly because nobody knows. Let me tell you about Mogo's partner. Mogo's partner, oh man, he must be really big. No, he's a fly or something like that. Anyway, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, the voice cast. Kelly Hu doesn't get put before the credits. Which
nope, I thought Henry Allen was awful.
Who did she play?
She was Lara, wasn't she?
Yep.
Yeah, she's Lara.
So I thought Henry Allen was pretty awful.
Based on DC characters, yeah.
First Lantern written by Michael Green. Those are the guys who wrote the movie. So,
based on New Blood by Peter Tomasi and Chris Samnee, written by Peter Tomasi.
Yep. I like how they just
Dave Gibbons actually wrote this.
I told you that during
He told you that. Good job. Good listening. Based on Tigers, illustrated by Kevin O'Neill.
They did not say Alan Moore's name.
Well, they can't. I don't think they legally can.
I had to pause it. Story by Jeff Johns. No wonder it didn't make any sense. Then with life. What? With life? Get out of my face.
I can't argue about the direction because these were directed by different people.
No. Yeah, I'm not going to play about the direction. I'm talking about the planet being used as the victory at the end. It doesn't make any sense. If he's antimatter and matter can defeat him, she's like, but I have something the same mass as him. I don't know. That doesn't really, it's not like Time Cop where the same matter cannot occupy the same space. It doesn't. If a clone of you and you are standing there and you touch each other, you're not occupying the same space. You're in two completely different spaces. You're just physically touching each other. But
who is Tentor to be getting all that? Okay, no, never mind. It's alphabetical order. Never mind. Really fast.
Watch it. Like there's a really name. Watch it.
I agree with you. The whole plant being used. And the funny thing is, like, is how is it the same mass?
Yeah, I know. It's the same mass or whatever. I guess
probably just assume it's more. Well, one of the people is named Chun Li or Chun Lu. Sorry.
If only it was Chun Li.
Just like really racist.
If
today.
Only
like, me being racist. This is the most racist.
They really named it.
I didn't even talk about it. What did you guys actually think of the movie as a whole?
That was awkward.
How about Kuhan? Let's go Kuhan.
I don't know. I thought it was okay. I don't know. It was the same thing over and over again, really, kind of. I mean.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
That's nothing
new. How's it true that it was the same thing over and over again?
Well, just because every story was pretty much the same.
It doesn't, it's not the same, but it ends the same.
Well, every story starts with, like, Green Lantern having a problem.
So every story has someone sacrificing themselves.
Well, three stories actually were about Green Lanterns who were brand new, who learned to better themselves through personal problems, and then at the end of it, created a really big construct to win.
Well, the main reason for that, again, it was for Arisha's sake. She was brand new. She was being told stories about, you know.
Yeah, but then why did they tell the other two stories? Because they were like, we're tired of telling you stories that are...
Well, once, and that show's an asshole. He doesn't know how to tell a proper story.
Yeah, it's true.
And then the other guys came out of nowhere going like, hey, you never told the story of Mogo?
Well, you're sort of justifying the redundancy of the movie with story logic, but the problem is that even within story logic, why would Arisha want to hear the same story three times? She's probably like, I'm so bored with how telling you about this fight. Like, yes, he flew, and then he flew in a pattern, and then there was this fighter, and then there was a shadow, and then there was a spider shadow.
Let me guess how this ends. Someone creates a conch.
That's really big, and then they win.
So guys, movie's over. Just so if you're listening and you're like, why are they still talking past the movie? It's over. So
yeah. So now I guess we just.
Well, yeah. So
let's talk about the movie a bit.
No, we can talk about the movie. Are we going to do a show later about this?
I don't know. We shouldn't review the movie during the show. We just did this whole damn thing.
All right, fine, whatever. Do it.
Why don't you talk?
Eric,
talk.
How much you like the movie?
I did like it actually. I think Kuhan's right. It's really redundant. I don't know if I'm going to sit through the whole thing again.
No. For the third time?
At least not very often. I will watch some of it, though, and I think as much as I liked a lot of it, I think if I think about, like, would I watch just the Lyra by itself? I would, but are there things that are like the Lyra story that's better than the Lyra story? Yeah, I mean, not to say, like, every movie has to be better than every other movie ever made, but would I keep going back to this? And it's kind of like if you watch this movie three times in a row, you literally watch the same story 90 times just by watching this movie three times. But it's cool. I like it. I think there was really, really cool visual elements, and I think that's kind of like the big deal about Green Lantern. But the comics, which is ridiculous because they're comics and they're all visual, what they really miss about Green Lantern is that the at least all the motion adaptions we've seen of them so far really seem to get is that it's all about images, and it's all about the tactile stuff that happens with it, you know. And we should all wonder, like, hey, can you snap a construct? Because the comics never really address it like that, and that's insane. Like, you know, I mean, the fact that these movies can tap into the potential of the potential of the property better than the actual comics can.
I have a kind of a question. Like, what's the purpose of the movie? Like, is it two, like, four people to see this in, like, you know, Best Buy or whatever and buy it and, like, get into Green Lantern?
Just
for people like us?
Right.
Well, the main reason for the movie is, one, capitalizing, like how Eric said. Two, it is to sort of introduce the larger mythos of the Green Lantern universe to newcomers. I mean, yes, we had First Flight out there for most people that, you know, that, like, when it came out previous years ago. We got to know Hal Jordan. We got to know Hal Jordan. We got to know Sinestro. We got to understand their characters. But now we understand a broader range of the Green Lantern mythos. We know more of these characters.
So with that purpose of people coming out of the theater after having seen the movie or whatever.
Or that are excited to see the movie. But basically, it's obviously a capitalization. But we think about it, though. In theory, though, if someone said to you, we're going to make another Green Lantern animated movie, well, as much as I would have been like, sweet, sequel to First Flight, maybe we'll do Sinestro Corps War. Like, all right, we're not going to do that. Well, that's fine. But then they said, well, we're going to do a bunch of vignettes about the different Green Lanterns. We're like, oh, okay. Great, that's actually a really good idea. So this movie, in theory, is a really good idea, and actually, that in and of itself is a perfect reason to make a Green Lantern Corps movie, to be like, because we can do a bunch of different space opera stories about the Green Lantern Corps members. So this movie didn't quite live up to its potential of that, because I feel like, and not to rip on these guys, but the staff that was involved are kind of limited in what they can really do and how creative they are.
Very true.
But
is that a canon problem? You think they should have just chose different stories or just original stories?
I think I would not have minded if they were doing original stories. I think they should have done original stories for the sake of argument, but I don't mind them doing canon stories. I'm old enough now that I'm past the point where I want to see like episodes adapt my favorite stories, though. I like the process of adaption or adaptation, whatever you want to call it. So, I think that's cool. The two of the stories they adapted, they kind of had to adapt, you know? I mean, they kind of had to adapt Tigers and they kind of had to adapt Mogo, you know? But,
well, the TV didn't need to adapt Tigers the way it is
at the time. No, they didn't adapt Tigers at all. You're absolutely right. But they kind of didn't need to, because that's one of the bigger known stories that are short stories, you know? And I mean, I bet you between all of us, we probably couldn't even think of very many short stories, Green Lantern short stories that were featured in Green Lantern besides those two stories. I mean,
we just put out Tales of the Core last year.
No, I mean, I'm sure we could.
Like, those were great. And we did get one of those in there.
Well, thinking about, we can always think back to Green Lantern Corps.
We can, because I can think of, like, the Jack T. Chan story where he fought Lobo and, you know, the guy who fought vampires all the time and shit. I can think of them if I want
to. Crypt Keeper.
The point versus the sorcerer, chipmunk of his race.
Exactly. The point is that, you know, they picked ones that, you know, they had to pick, and then the other ones just kind of devolved into fighting and stuff. It was cool. I mean, you know, I think it'd be cool if they had another one of these, because they kind of – now they would be forced to do something more interesting. And I think it didn't quite live up to its potential, but in and of itself, as an existing – if you would have told me, you know, a couple of years ago before we even knew there was going to be a Green Lantern movie, that they're making an animated movie about a bunch of Green Lantern vignettes, I would have been like, that's awesome. You know, so if the movie wasn't looming over this, we would be able to see past the fact that it is what it is, which is a cash grab. But we'd be able to see past the fact and what kind of creative merit it has, you know, as actual animated representation of the Green Lantern comics history, you know, which is cool.
Well, as something that's, you know, that's kind of meant to get new fans into the comics, sort of, in a way. Would you recommend this to somebody, to like a new fan, as like, hey, this is your introduction to the Green Lantern Corps, or would you,
absolutely.
I would.
In all fairness, though, I'm going to say, like, my girlfriend who started watching was kind of bored by it. She didn't finish it, and she liked Green Lantern conceptually when she'd seen the comics, and she's predisposed to be okay with reading comics, but she's been burned by the fact that most of them aren't very good. And I kind of try to explain to her, like, they are, but then I'm really like, wait, they're not. Like, 90% of the comics are bad. Even the ones I read are bad, you know. And like, so I think Brandon's right that it absolutely is something you should show to people, but you have to kind of, they have to also be predisposed to just watching people fight for an hour, you know?
Yeah. Well, I don't expect this to be the transition.
That's kind of what people want in comics that are, you know, that want to read comics right now anyway, right? It's just to watch people fight for 20 minutes.
It's a certain minority, certain people that want to see more stories than just see straight violence. I mean, Eric, I know Eric, you want to see like none. Like hardcore violence.
I want to see a fight. Yeah. I'm a fight machine. If a storyline doesn't end with a fight, I think it's a waste of goddamn time. But I mean, that's superhero comics. Superhero comics are just a bunch of colorful characters flying around having soap opera disputes and punctuated by acts of violence to solve the conflicts. And that's fine. That's what we're reading. I'm not complaining about that necessarily. I just mean to say is about halfway through every single one of these, they just started fighting and it didn't stop, you know? Except for Bullfunga. And that was the worst one, so.
And Lyra, they stopped for, you know, a moment to, like, you know, explain.
That one was actually the best balance, even though it had probably had more fighting than all of them, because it really sold the drama of the conflicts, you know. It wasn't just them blasting spaceships.
They all had breaks in the fight.
They did. I have to agree. I mean, it's like the Justice League Unlimited show. That's my problem with that. Like, that show was a really great show, one of the best interpretations of DC Universe ever. The last season was almost unwatchable in terms of every episode was just, they would go to a new place and then they would fight. You know, it's like, hey, it's War World, and then we'll fight. It's, hey, it's Underground, and then we'll fight. Hey, it's Green Arrow's Kitchen, and then we'll fight. You know, I mean, that's basically all it was for 20 episodes and stuff, which is very exciting. It was very cool at the time, but by the time it was over, I'm like, I'm kind of glad this is over. You know, I don't really need to see this ever again. And it reminds me of, like, we covered the last Justice League movie, Crisis on what was it called? Inferno's?
Two Earths.
Again, not at all a movie. No one would even remotely say that was a movie. There was just a really long, extended series of fights, you know, and I was really disappointed by it, you know, but so I feel like, yeah, they have to predispose a certain amount of heavy action, you know, but this, I think you're right. I think this would be a pretty good gateway, I think, into the comics, because when people see this, like, wow, there's a lot of variety in these comics, you know. And then, technically speaking, obviously Geoff Johns wrote his story as a gateway into the comics. I mean, that's basically just animated prologue to Please Buy My Sinestro Corps book, you know. So which would be effective enough, because if I was like, oh, sweet, like Brandon said, oh, this would be really cool if they made a Sinestro Core one. Since we know they're not, we're probably all going to go back to our Sinestro Core War paperbacks and be like, oh, these are cool.
Yeah, well, you mentioned Children of the White Lotus. I was just like, God, that was the best part of the Green Lantern comics for so long. It's just like, yeah, damn.
Yeah.
Well,
Frank, did you like it? I mean, you know, I think you seem to like it. You're defending it.
I enjoyed the movie. Again, it is a good gateway for newcomers in the Green Lantern genre to like watch certain stories and be enthralled in it, just to see either one, take it for what it is and what it was, and either take it and go back and actually look up the original material it came from. Like, you know, going back and trying to find the Lyra story, or going back and actually finding the original Tiger story. Or even Mogul doesn't socialize story, even for the four to five pages that it was.
But the 600,000 times it's been reprinted too, right?
Right. And it wasn't bad. Visually, I enjoyed it. Yeah. It was a sort of a step up for me in terms of First Flight for some reason. First Flight animation and drawing style was good, but this one just made it better because there's a lot more going on. There was a lot more movement, a lot more colorization for the characters. There was a lot more fluidness in this movie than there was in First Flight for me.
Yeah, yeah. So who, Brandon, you said you weren't the biggest fan of First Flight, right?
No, not at all.
Do you like this better, or did you like that better?
Oh, infinitely better.
Really?
Infinitely better. Yeah, the story flowed. It didn't seem rushed. I mean, the transitions with, you know, I mean, of course, Sinestro's story was a little awkward, but I did like the idea of everybody ganging in and telling a story, not just Hal. And I thought that it was a lot better than, oh, Hal goes from Earth to Oa to this random mission with Sinestro. And it felt so much better than First Flight. And, I mean, it's not a great movie at all, but I thought it was a solid movie. And for what it was, which is an introductory, well, an addition for people who are coming out of the live action movie, I thought it was great. Like, if my little cousin comes out of Green Lantern saying this was awesome, I'm going to show him this movie, because I know if you like the movie, I know you're gonna like this.
That's a good point.
As long as the movie gets the basics down, you're going to like this.
That's a good point. I think the weaknesses, since Frankie brought up the direct comparison, the weaknesses to this versus First Flight, I actually think as much as the story in First Flight seemed kind of rushed, it was a more, what's it called, varied narrative. I mean, which is this, I was like, it's just like a lot of fighting and there's a lot of vignettes and stuff and different characters and stuff. But First Flight, I felt like, had more personality and more character. And the plotting wasn't intricate, but at least it was kind of plotted and story rose.
Who was the character in First Flight outside of Hal and his corny jokes?
Hal had some good jokes, but then I think Kilowog had his personality, and then Boudica had a little bit of personality, but mostly Sinestro.
Wait, Eric, here's the thing. In talking about the comparison that I was trying to make, I was making a comparison on
visuals.
On the visual side. I didn't even touch it.
No, I know. I was just
the
saying.
The character itself, or the story itself. Now, hold on a second. The story itself in First Flight is dramatically a lot better than Emerald Knight, just because, again, it's a linear story. It's one story. It's one composite story of what, from point A to point B. You get a broader characterization between the characters, because you only get one character to look at to grow into.
That's true.
You know, between Sinestro and Hal Jordan. In this story, you get varied characters to understand and to understand their plot points and their creation or their what's their motivation. That's
but you still get from plot A to plot point B.
Yeah, yeah, technically speaking, they do. I mean, is First Flight really that much more plotted than any of these short stories? Yeah, because there's the main plot of the movie is Sinestro doing the training day thing, where he's kind of finagling everybody and working with Kandro and stuff. And I mean, what I just meant to say, I was going to kind of try to segue into the fact that I feel like the characters had more personality and the story is more interested in kind of going to a spot, as opposed to this was always kind of just interested in displaying certain things, you know? And I think maybe it was just Victor Garber or Sinestro for me.
I was about to say, the only reason you actually liked it more is because of Victor Garber.
No, I think, like I said, I like it better as a story, and I think the characters are funnier, and I get them more, and I like Hal better in that. I like Hal better as a rookie who just is kind of sarcastic and just sardonic and a little removed from everything, as opposed to this kind of sage-like Hal, which is like, you know, I think they're trying to...
Well, again, they're two completely different timelines or alternate universes. Because, again, you can't really take for face value that, you know, this happened during the same time span. You can't.
No, it's obviously not this kind.
There's no possible way that you can believe that when the moment Hal Jordan showed up on Oa, he spent a week, became a sage, hung out with Sinestro, taught Aresia the ropes, fought Krona, and then the very next day was taken by Sinestro under his wing to go fight something else.
No, I mean, exactly. It can't really fit. But I think the thing with First Flight, it's like, First Flight, again, I keep saying Training Day. That's obviously what it's supposed to be like. But
Training Day
is interesting because in the first 5 minutes, he's kind of threatened by this guy. And then the next 5 minutes, he thinks Denzel Washington is kind of cool. And then he spends the next hour and a half realizing that he's a bigger and bigger scumbag. So there's no real point where they get along. And that's the First Flight's like that. There's no real point where Hal is like Sinestro's a good guy. Hal is just removed enough from the situation to realize that something's kind of up with Sinestro. And that's what it's about. Whereas this, you know, it's establishing that they're good friends and that kind of thing. And I think that's also what's interesting about First Flight, that it legitimizes Hal being part of the core. I don't know. It's a completely different kind of story. And I think you're right. It's got broader characterization. So I do think that, like, the voice acting in that was infinitely better. I think Larry Drake's The Guardians are better. I think Michael Madsen, as much as I didn't like him as Kilowog the first time around, was better. I think, you know, Trisha Helfer as a fierce Boudica was better than just like the 4-year-old baby girl that they got for Aresia, you know. And Jason Isaacs was, I mean, again, I say terrible, but he was absolutely nothing as Sinestro. Like, there's nothing to.
I would like to point out that when these castings were first announced, that everybody said, "Oh my God, Henry Rollins!"
Nobody said no.
Me because I didn't even know who the hell.
Nobody said Henry Rollins was going
to
be good.
It turns out to be
I never said Henry Rollins was crap. I enjoyed Henry Rollins' interpretation of Kilowog. I mean,
come on,
he's a different guy. He has a completely different voice. I accepted him for what he was.
I don't think I ever said he would be great. I do think in this movie, though, that his voice is digitally modified. So what was the point of getting him in the first place?
Nobody said Henry Rollins was going to be any good. They just
We were just excited about him as a person. I didn't even know who Henry Rollins was.
No, nobody said he was going to be any good. They were surprised you didn't know who he was.
As a person, he's a great guy. You know what? We're going to actually wrap it up because, you know, we've gone way too long in this spectacular commentary of Emerald Knights. So everyone who's been listening in, I'm glad you stayed tuned for the extra 25 minutes that we went off.
I don't know why you did, but you know.
After the movie, I hope you enjoyed our valid points between the comparisons of First Flight and Emerald Knights. And I hope you enjoyed our commentary. So until next time, we'll see you on the next Green Lantern movie project. And stay tuned for our special edition Barrett commentaries.
And maybe next time we'll even get into talking about Nathan Fillion as the voice.
Yeah.
Be sure to check us out at www.thegreenlanterncorps.com.
You can also email us at contact@thegreenlanterncorps.com.
You can follow us on Twitter at @theGLCorps.
And be sure to check out our YouTube channel at youtube.com/GLSpotlight.
You can reach our voicemail line at 313-GL1-2814. That's 313-451-2814.
Thanks for listening and check us out next time. And please stop masturbating when I'm talking to you.
Don't forget to check out Kirby Crackle, the performance of our opening theme, Ring Capacity, at kirbycracklemusic.com. Also check out the Roy Clark Method, the performance of our ending theme, Sector 2814, at freeweb.com/RoyClarkMethod.
I have this magic ring. It's the color green. It can do anything. Sometimes it speaks to me and says, "How? What?"